Good morning, everyone. Everyone awake and ready? Good. Please join me in prayer. O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother,
Beloved Jesus Christ,
Blessed Master,
Dearest Mother,
Saints and Sages of all religions,
I bow to all of you.
Free my life from all obstacles.
And give me physical, mental, and spiritual development.
Make my mind thy temple.
Make my heart thy altar.
Make my love thy home.
Be thou the only King.
Reigning on the throne of my consciousness. Beautiful sunshiny day today. It's easy to believe that God is beautiful. I don't know why I'm reminded of a funny that I heard the other day. An IRS agent was calling to a minister and he said, do you know Mr. Bruce? And he said, yes, he's a member of the congregation. He said, I'm just confirming here, did he contribute $10,000 last year? And he said, he will be. Very quick thinking minister. I remember a time, of course, Mother never charged for anything. She never wanted an organization, a board of directors. And she had me take vows to that extent. But before that happened, when Mother was asking me to give talks, Peter Schultz asked me, well, will you ask Mother whether we can form a nonprofit so that contributions can be tax deductible? Well, I was virtually assured of what Mother's answer would be, but I felt enjoined upon to go ahead and ask the question. After I asked the question and I got through putting together the ashes that I was, that Mother had turned me into, after her withering response was absolutely not. There'll never, because of course to be incorporated, you have to be, as a nonprofit, you have to have a board of directors and that kind of thing. What Mother wanted, of course, was to keep the focus of attention on God. It's so easy, even within a small group of people, that certain dynamics grow up. As God humorously gave me one time, where two or more gathered, there shall be politics. And it's true that there's differences that arise, and people's feelings get hurt, and expectations get disappointed. This is the nature of the world. We have to take a little bit of that along the way. And for those who have the courage and the desire and the inner direction from God to be center leaders, they learn this quite quickly, that people come with certain expectations, certain ideas of how they think things should go, how they think things should run. And we've been given a format. We've been given a format from Master, and from Master to Mother, and what Mother gave to me. And it follows in a particular way, and it's, some people want to have more socialization and this kind of thing, and it's wonderful when we have times to socialize. But we should always remember that the real reason that we come together is to really deeply turn our attention towards God. It's sometimes disappointing when you feel God so powerfully within a group. And then it disperses into more social kind of talk, and pretty soon the laughter is there, and the topic of conversation goes anywhere but toward God. And the reason, oftentimes, is
that the tremendous amount of power that we feel from God at a particular time, we're not used to holding it. So unconsciously, we're looking for a way to let it out. If we can just learn how to hold it, it doesn't mean that we can't be in a social circumstance, can't mean that we can't laugh and that kind of thing, but there's a way to do it where you hold everything that you've been given within you and you don't just let it drain out through casual conversation and through being unmindful of the tremendous power, that presence that is within you. The whole thing, you see, is to awaken that presence within you so that it becomes a living entity within you, a guiding principle, something that you experience from moment to moment. And to treat it casually, to treat it as if it is a second-class citizen, so to speak, is to disrespect God, and it is definitely to disrespect God within you. Learn to hold that presence within you at all times, in all circumstances. Now, this is not an easy thing to do. It's not an easy thing to do. And as Mother said, it's what the whole mystical crucifixion is built around, is the purification of the mind and of the body and of the emotions to become pure instruments for divine consciousness. And as Mother oftentimes said, Rome was not built in a day, and neither do you get your God realization in a day. You have to do the work. So we should always, in all circumstances, there's never a time when God is not present with you. Why would you deny yourself the privilege of feeling His presence? But you see how easily the mind gets diverted. The moment you go away, this and that and the other thing begins to call you. Old habit patterns so easily dictate to you where your mind and everything about you goes. And so you have to fight the battle. Now, we'd like then, I've heard people say, well, I wish you could use some other analogy other than a battle, but I really can't think of one that's much better. Or the mystical crucifixion, those are such harsh things. Well, you have to make it a black and white issue for you. It's like a recovering alcoholic. You can't be a little gray here and there, or your old default for the alcoholic will be to go back to the alcohol. You can't play around the edges. There's no such thing. And when you're recovering from the delusion of this world, it's very much the same thing. Your default is to go with ego consciousness. And until you have established yourself in divine consciousness, that will be your default. So there's never a time that we can let up, so to speak. Now, this doesn't mean that you need sackcloth and ashes, or you need to think life is terrible, or any of that kind of thing. In the Vedas, in the Hindu scriptures, it says that kama is the enjoyment of things, and that is actually part of the spiritual path, but it's done with a sense of the divine within that pleasure. You don't let your mind run with it, and for the pleasure to become the dictator within you. So you can enjoy the things of this world, but don't let your mind run with them always and forever. Keep God first. Keep God first. And when we tithe, and it's a wonderful thing, really. When I first came to Mother, I hadn't thought too much about tithing. And I had the joke earlier about that. But really, when you give money to God, feel it come from the heart. I've heard the term love offering, and I get a little wary of that. It becomes something that's a little too common and I think loses its meaning oftentimes. But really, when you feel that comes from your heart and you say, here are the first fruits, God, and I give them back to you in love and gratitude, and you feel it as a givingness, as a movement from yourself. And there's times when I receive money, and I know that for many people, money is tight. And I know that everybody, no matter how much money you have, really, you could always think of other things to spend that money. It's not hard. So when that money comes as a donation, I oftentimes feel that, and I feel the vibration that comes with it. and the thoughtfulness and the gratitude and the love that it comes with. And it's tremendous. It's a tremendous experience for me. And it's very humbling to me, I can assure you. Very humbling to me. But it's such a wonderful thing when you do it in that spirit. You can sense it, perhaps, as I speak about it. How full, how complete, how loving of an action that can be. And it's giving back to God. And as the scripture says, as you give, so shall you receive. And many of us want to turn that around and say, well, when I receive, then I'll give. You know, when I'm rich enough, then all right, then I'll... No, as you give, so shall you receive. You set up a dynamic flow within yourself. And it's not just materiality, although that is included. But it's also emotional wealth. Wealth of love, wealth of peace, wealth of a sense of well-being. Those are the emotions. There's a mental wealth, creativity, positivity within the thoughts. These are mental wealth. And then there is spiritual wealth, which is the bliss, the light, the wisdom that come to you from the divine. Now, in one sense, you can say it's all part of God, and that is very, very true. But from a human standpoint, when we look at it, we see health, wealth in the physical, wealth in the emotional, wealth in the mental, and wealth in the spiritual. And as you give, so shall you receive. When you give love, then you receive more love. And this is the law of the universe. It really is. I wanted to read from a transcription of a talk that Mother gave August 30th, 1960, in Portland, Oregon, for a period of time. Mother and her husband, Father Hamilton, lived in Portland. Billy Graham announces imminent end of the world. Well, Father said this morning, what's the matter with Billy Graham? Is he going crazy, losing his mind? And I said to him, oh, what do you mean? What has he said now? And he said, well, this is the second time now in Europe that he's predicted that within just a few days' time that the end of the world will come, and that people better know that this is so and prepare themselves, because Christ is going to appear in a cloud out of the heavens, and judgment day will be upon us. And I said to him, well, if Billy Graham is losing his mind, then I must be too, because the same thing came to me the other day. I said, do you remember when I told you that for the first time in many long months I've again been directed to the Bible? And he said, yes. And I said, well, that's one of the things that I was shown, that actually the Battle of Armageddon is going on right now. I was shown the good and evil forces that are at work in the world, and I was referred to the chapter in Matthew where it says, and Jesus went out and departed from the temple, and his disciples came to show him the buildings of the temple. And Jesus said unto them, see ye not all these things? Verily I say unto you, there shall not be left one stone upon another that shall not come be thrown down. And as he sat upon the Mount of Olives, the disciples came unto him privately, saying, tell us, when shall these things be? And what shall be the sign of thy coming, and the end of the world? And Jesus answered and said unto them, take heed that no man deceive you, for many shall come in my name, saying, I am Christ, and shall deceive many. And you shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that you be not troubled, for all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines and pestilences and earthquakes in diverse places. All of these are the beginning of sorrows. Then shall they deliver you up to be afflicted, and shall kill you, and you shall be hated of all nations for my name's sake. And then shall many be offended, and shall betray one another, and shall hate one another, and many false prophets shall rise, and shall deceive many. And because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold. But he that shall endure unto the end, the same shall be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations, and then shall come the end. When ye, therefore, shall see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet, shall stand in the holy place, then let them be in Judea flee into the mountains. Let him which is on a housetop not come down to take out anything of his house. Neither let him which is in the field return back to take his clothes. Woe unto them that are with child, and to them that shall give suck in those days. But pray ye that your flight be not in the winter, neither on the Sabbath day. For then shall be great tribulation, such as not been since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor shall ever be. And except these days should be shortened, there should be no flesh saved. But for the elect's sake, those days shall be shortened. And if any man shall say unto, lo, the Christ is here or there, believe it not. For there shall arise false Christs and false prophets, and shall show great signs and wonders, insomuch, if it were possible, they shall deceive the very elect. Behold, I have told you before. Wherefore, if they shall say unto you, behold, he is gone into the desert, go not forth. Behold, he is in secret chambers, believe it not. For as the lightning come out of the east, and shineth unto the west, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. For wheresoever the carcass is, there will be the eagles gathered together. Immediately after the tribulation of those days shall the sun be darkened, and the moon shall not give her light, and the stars shall fall from the heaven, and the powers of the heaven shall be shaken. And then shall appear the Son of Man in heaven. And then shall all the tribes of the earth mourn. And they shall see the Son of Man coming in the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. And he shall send his angels with great sound of trumpet, and they shall gather together his elect from the four winds, from one end of the heaven to the other. The appointed ones that are here at the beginning of the last of time must all go back to God. And this is a terrific deal, you see. I have already experienced within myself everything that I have read you inwardly. Apparently this is happening outwardly, because every paper you pick up today is a definite proof that everything that is contained in here is so. There is pestilence all over China. There is famine in both China and parts of India, because of the drought in India, because of the pestilence in China. And all these things, and all of these things are nations fighting against nations. And if they shall actually go to war one with the other, as it looks as though they are about to do, certainly the thing that has been going on in these dominated countries would come to pass even here. Because these people are afraid to trust anybody. Even their own family betray one another. Members of the family betray one another. And just as it says here, everything here. Now, if it does happen in the winter or on the Sabbath, the seventh day within yourself, or the consciousness of your spinal center and the inside, and on the Sabbath day on the outside, I'm just not clear as to what connection that would have with regarding this particular thing on the outside. But the Battle of Armageddon is going on. There could be absolutely no doubt, because exactly the same thing is shown in the Bhagavad Gita, that this happens. And as I have experienced all of this in the most unique way, I've never heard of anyone who has experienced everything that is in there in the same way that I myself have. I know that I have one more experience to go through. And I have been on the verge of going through that for the last 2 weeks, and I have been fighting it with everything that I have, because I don't want to go into it. It is as though my mind is being withdrawn. In the times when I have gone through these other experiences, for a time I have lost body consciousness, but I have not gone out of the body. I have been in the body through all the experiences, with the ability to, when I come back into the state of conscious state, remember even the distorted things that I have been able to tell you about so many of these things. And there are many more that I could tell you if I would. Some of them are in an exalted form, and some of them are in a demonic form. So this time, when I go into this, I'm going to leave my body. I feel it definitely. And it isn't a fear of leaving the body, but it's a fear of losing the ego consciousness, or the conscious mind, which operates and directs all my movement in this body. And it's perhaps a fear of what could be insanity, and of leaving the body permanently. Now, in the ordinary sense, I don't mind death at all, you see. I have no fear of it. I know that I have had this experience where I know that we could not die, that we live consciously. But the fear is mostly losing control of my conscious mind to the point where it might actually be considered insanity. And then leaving the body and people thinking that I've actually died, when actually I am not. And then I'm merely going through an experience and that I will return to the body. Now this is what I know for sure. These are the things that are in me, and constantly these forces are trying to take me out this last 2 weeks. And I have had all I could do to stay on my feet and keep conscious mind with me. It's been the most difficult. Well, I've been talking about the battle of Armageddon, which is going on within myself. There's a battle between good and evil, and the way that you could explain it is that I have a tremendous ego. Having a tremendous ego, I have an equally strong spiritual ego, or a desire to go to God. And so the one who wants me to withdraw from the world and go all the way to God, thinking of nothing else, and the other, not like it, not that it likes the world anymore, but it wants to hold on to its conscious knowledge of the world as it has always existed in this body. And so the two forces are warring, you see. And when you are in such a state, all you can do is hang on to God alone and pray. 6 o'clock this morning, I was up crying my eyes out because I was being drawn again. It's just as though all the blood, the energy, is receding from my head, from my brain, and I feel myself slowly going out, and I fight to get back. I fight to keep on my feet. So I went out, and I stood before Master's picture, and I talked to him. I looked him straight in the eye and I said, "What are you going to do about this? I'm in a sad state." And this one instance now, and you can remember it well, what does one do without a guru? A guru is absolutely necessary to go through these things, because where in God's name are you without one? Now, Ram Dass is in India. Master is not in the body, and here am I. And if you think this isn't hell, you should try it sometime. If you think you've got problems, you don't know what problems are. And this is the truth. It is a terrific experience within yourself. Because more than anything else, I want to go to God. My will to go to God is absolutely supreme. And yet this is the other fighting to keep me from doing it with the spirit that I have just mentioned. So I said to him, meaning Master, "This whole thing as it stands today started in Washington, D.C., when I was so concerned over what had happened to all the work that you had done for 32 years and the devastation that I had seen in all the centers, where in 2 short years everything that you had worked to build had been destroyed, that I sat there and I cried for over 2 solid hours over your picture all by myself because of my great love for you. And I made the vow then that if there is anything that I could do to help restore this, that God had only to call on me, that I was his servant. And from that time on, things started to happen. He took me at my word. Well, I have gone through everything that I have been through. I gave myself joyfully and willingly to the tremendous crucifixion that I went through in India. I did that of my own volition. And in the middle of it, I even said that I would do this 1,000 times if it was necessary. But I've been in this state of not knowing where I am, what's happening to me, where I'm going, how it's going to manifest itself. I am absolutely helpless. I can't even write a letter anymore. I'm fretting and completely frustrated about that. I can't do anything. I'm total and absolute loss in the world, as far as I'm concerned. I'm not making any progress. I'm not doing anything. Now, what are you going to do about it?" Speaking to Master. "I was absolutely loyal to you. I even fought Ram Dass all the way, right up to the hilt. And then all of a sudden, just as I was going through the tail end of the last experience I went through, I lost Master and I couldn't find him. and I haven't found him since. Very occasionally, I feel something. Others have seen him standing behind me, have seen me disappear and seen him in my place. But I have not consciously been at one with him as I was before. There was never any separation. My heart, my mind, and my soul were just enmeshed wholeheartedly, just everything with him. Now I can't do that. And while I see the absolute purity, the absolute essence of spirit in everything that Ram Dass turns out in his magazines and in his books, and I accept that, nevertheless I have a tremendous fear of him because of what I went through before. Tremendous. And the thought came to me, he who falls in the hands of the living God is a terrible thing, or words to that effect. Ram Dass has shown to me as being the Father God come down here. And he is absolutely above race, color, creed, denomination of any sort, even above. Although he is functioning in the state of Christ consciousness, he has gone beyond all form completely into the absolute. Mother continues to describe her present state. You see, people are... When you're on this path, people are gradually sent to you because they're attracted to the spiritual worship and devotion which you have within yourself, and whatever enlightenment you may have attained and obtained. But it is said that many times when a guru comes to earth, you see, that the disciples are given to such a one prior to the time that that one reaches complete illumination. Which is many times true, because there are many masters now, or so-called masters, who have not full illumination. And yet they have many, many disciples. So they bring the disciple along with them. So at the time of final illumination, then half the work is already done, so that they are able to help them for the last part. But why such a one is going through that, there are very few of them who either do realize or who want to realize, or who are interested in the fact that the guru is going through tremendous experiences themselves, and should perhaps have consideration, which they are not given, which perhaps is part of the way of the cross. They try to give love and understanding and help to those who come to them. But do those who come to them ever try to give them help and love and understanding? There is that, you see. And because the guru is what they are, and what he or she is, I should say, they do not tell, they can't tell, the average individual, because if they were able to tell such a one, that one might lose their faith. And they can't afford to take the chance of destroying everything that has been built up within them. And yet the test has come to everyone someday, even as it came to me at one time with my own master, even as it has come to me with Ram Dass. Because I can remember when I was going through this state with Ram Dass, when for the first time I performed Pada Puja, which is the washing of the saints' feet, with all the ritual that attended to it. And it seemed to me that, having come to this point, that from then on I was putting myself in his hands, and I was no longer going to be only in Master's hands, but that, like the transfer, was being made to a higher authority, or one who was able to take me the rest of the way, because it was necessary to have a guru in the body for the tremendous thing that I had to go through. And I can remember that one of the first things that I ever experienced as I went into this state was to see a picture that I had of Master. It's the standard one, like we have of the big one there, only it's in black and white and it was small. And I would see the caste mark in the center of the forehead, and then would come with a whole row of pictures, each one carrying his face and all with the caste mark. But the caste mark was a little bit off center in each one, and only on right and center was his. And so the thought came to me, Shivananda might be hanging behind that mask. Master might be hanging behind that mask. Ram Dass might be almost anybody. And so I was all confused. I didn't know which one was truly my master, my guru. But I felt that after that, I came out of this, that Ram Dass is going to be my guru, and yet I haven't been able to reject Master. I haven't been able to accept him. So this is another war which has been going on through me. The part of the time I try to go back to Master, and part of the time I try to accept him. And I've just been in between the devil and the deep blue sea, you might say, in that particular way.
It's been a terrific experience. And so Papa said, I can remember so well. And they tell me that I drank all the water that his feet were washed in, which may be the reason I finally got this deal I went through with my throat. I don't know, because it is said that the water washed in the feet of the saint is holy and healing. But you see, I had such a terrible state that I didn't know how I accepted it. And it's your acceptance, perhaps, or your faith in it that, and I don't have the faith in that. As a matter of fact, to me, that was repulsive when I was in a conscious state. And yet, when I asked what became of this, they told me that I drank the whole thing, and I don't remember doing it, you see. But I do remember, he said to me, after you come out of this, Father must answer all the letters because you must spend your time securing yourself in God. And this morning it came to me that I could no longer write letters, no matter how much I wanted to. I can't. I just can't. I have to give that up. I have to go into whatever I'm going to go into, and Father has to take over. And then, quick, my mind said, well, but you better write to blank, Raphael, and you better write to Dr. Katien Kaman, and you better write to this woman in Baltimore, because these are the personal pets of yours in that sense, and you have worked with them more and brought them along, and you must write to the Frenchman, Edmond, and so on, you see. So there are about a half a dozen that I feel I still have to do before. And then at the end of the time, I can say to Father, all right, now, whenever you come, you write to them and answer them. And you write the best to the rest of them and say that I'm going through a spiritual sadhana. And while I still want to hear from them, that you will continue to write to them and keep them informed. Maybe you could do it in the sense of a form letter once a month, sent to all those who give him a list. I wanted to read you this for several reasons. One is the end of the world. And as you know, we have just had the 7th anniversary of 9/11. This was a plane shot that was heard around the world. And it has changed this world. And it's been a tremendous thing. You see, everything within the realm of consciousness can manifest, first of all, within the spiritual. And then through the mental, through the causal. And out of that comes the energetic or the astral. And finally comes the physical manifestation. There have been many people down through time who have talked about the end of the world and the imminent coming of the end of the world. Now, for some, it's just simply a delusion. And certainly there is tremendous power in this. When you begin to talk about the end of the world, it gets people's attention. Because they think something in their material mind is really going to happen now. And there have been many who have been deluded about this, thinking that the actual end of the world on the outside is coming. When you're in a state such as Mother was in 1960 when she was describing these things, you're in the middle of an experience, and it does indeed feel as if the entire world is coming to an end. I remember when I went through an experience of the nothingness of God, the absolute nothingness. I felt nothing. I was conscious. But I was not aware of any of my normal responses to this world. I felt absolutely neutral towards this world. Now, it's not a state of bliss, so it's not the state of highest realization. But it is a particular state that you go through. And somebody at the time told me, it feels to me like you're dead. And I said, I am. There is nothing inside of me that could respond to anything about this world. It's a complete emptying out of the cup. And then gradually, your experience of the world begins to come back. You see, everything that you experience in a spiritual sense, you come to, and in that experience, you may be taken up and lifted up into the highest realms of God consciousness. You may be taken down into the deepest depths of hell and everything in between. And up and down you go. As Mother said, it's like the two opposing forces. It's the good thief and the bad thief on either side of you.
And you can hear it and think of it in kind of an academic way. But when you're in the middle of it, you can't think past it. It's an experience that comes on you. Now, if you know that this is experience that you will pass through, it's very helpful. One of the things Mother didn't have was a lot of road maps. There weren't people who had had these experiences in the same way that she had. What she did have was the Bible, and the Bible was revealed to her, the inner truth. It's as if there's a subtext that is hidden within the primary text. And in the subtext, when you're able to read it, you see that there's a whole new level of reading it, of understanding it. And so when you hear people's interpretations and understanding of the Bible, it's like a Rorschach test where you're able to see what that person's development is all about. And if they're completely focused on the historical aspects of the Bible and of the personalities and that they really exist and where's the geographical locations at and can we find evidence of that, that's symbolic of their experience, of their consciousness, that they have a completely material mind. And then there are those who see more of the inner, the psychological aspects and the moral implications, and that is their emphasis. And so they've risen up a little bit. They're seeing it on a more subtle plane, a level. And then there are those who see laws of mind, laws of truth in operation, and how those manifest through thought power and through action. And so they have risen up, and they're seeing things more on a causal plane. And then there are those who see the whole play of consciousness as it unfolds into absolute spiritual consciousness. Now, they may be able to acknowledge there are certain historical aspects to the Bible. There are certainly laws of mind that are being enunciated. There are psychological principles that are being spoken about. But the most profound, the most powerful, the most deeply insightful are concerning those that take you all the way into spiritual consciousness. Now, that there are few that know this, that teach it, and that understand it at this time in the development of mankind is no big mystery. Most of the world's consciousness is very much in the material mind. We see that by the things that people manifest. We see that through the commercialism. We see that through people's focus of attention. And that is why if you tell people that it's the end of the world, you get their attention. They think about perhaps the society around them, the buildings, their own lives are what occurred to them. Will we see financial disaster? Will we see material disaster? Will we see the disaster of this body? And so for the material mind, that's the primary concern. And indeed, we may see manifestations, and we have seen manifestations. Mother talked about having tremendous vision at one time. And in that vision, she heard planes crashing and great destruction that came about it. And I immediately thought of this when I thought of 9/11. You see, I came out of Cloud Mountain out of a year of silence and solitude on 9/9. And it was 2 days later, in the morning, that this tremendous event took place. And I was actually looking on the computer, and it was on a news site, and I saw the planes crashing in the world, and at first, into these buildings. And at first I thought they were advertising a movie and that these were some kind of special effects. It was so unbelievable to see pictures of a plane flying into a building of this nature. But these things are reflections of people's consciousness. The whole world is a manifestation of the collective consciousness of all the beings in it, all the consciousness that is here. And the thing is we can get afraid about that. We can get afraid about our future. We can try to ignore it and just push it away and go on with our own lives. Or we can understand it. We can understand that this world is going through an evolutionary cycle, that there is a quickening of the consciousness as we move from the Kali Yuga and we are now into the Dwapara, that the Dwapara represents a quickening of intelligence. But the intelligence is just one part of the human spectrum. And so we're able to devise tremendous things in a technological sense, and some of these are highly destructive. But some of the world is still residing in much of the Kali Yuga dark consciousness and are willing to use these instruments of destruction in a willy-nilly fashion, that they're able to walk onto an airplane with people who are just doing nothing but going about their day and their business. They see women and they see children. They see people peacefully going about their business, and they think that this can be used as a bomb, as a destruction that will kill many other people than what are on the plane. There is no religion in the world that would countenance such a thing. And in fact, in the world and the religion of Islam, it specifically speaks against destroying those who are the innocent, who are not combatants. And yet these people's minds have become so twisted and convoluted that they have come to think that this is the right thing to do. Now we must stand up for what is true. We must stand up for what is right. We must stand up for God. Now we don't have to go down to the public square and shout it out or knock on the doors and try to spread the word in that way. But just simply within yourself, how you conduct yourself, how you go about your daily tasks, feel the light glowing from within you. See yourself embracing this world. Yesterday we had a wonderful day of silence and meditation. When in the beginning, there must have been some fire or some bad accident, because for perhaps 20 or 30 minutes there were sirens that were sounding. And so since many years ago, whenever I see a ambulance or I see a fire truck headed off someplace, I always say a prayer. I say a prayer for those first responders, those ones who are going to help, those who are having a difficulty. And I also pray for those who are in the state of difficulty, so that everything might be turned out for the perfection of God. Now you're here on this earth, and you are a participant. You can't just turn a blind eye to all these things going on. But you might ask yourself, but what can I do? I'm just one person. And what you can do is you can pray for these situations. Now, a material part of the mind may say, well, what difference does prayer make? And I can tell you it makes a tremendous amount of difference. First of all, it changes you. It changes your relationship to whatever is going on in the world. You feel the power, if you're praying correctly, you feel the power of God moving through you and going out from you to those situations, to those people. It also changes the situation. Now, you may pray for a particular condition, a situation, a person, and nevertheless, their outer condition doesn't change. And sometimes it is the karma of that particular person that they have to go through a particular thing. But when you send that light, when you send that love, when you send that uplifted consciousness to the other person, you are helping to give them strength. And it may be just the strength to bear whatever it is that they're having to go through. And they're uplifted. They're quickened through this. Their thoughts turn more positive. They feel more at peace. And this is a product of what the prayers are doing for that individual. Now, there are other times when a situation can be changed and turned, and the person may come about to complete and total healing. And of course, that is what we see and envision for the individual when we pray for them. We want to see them in the perfection of God's light. We want to see them in the perfection of God. Now, some people say, how can there be a God? And certain these things go about where people are having difficulties, where people are in pain, where people die. And the fact is that these things are not created by God in the sense that God represents the absolute consciousness, the total consciousness, the perfection, the purity. Because when you look around you, you don't see people thinking from that highest point of view or conducting their lives from that highest point of view.
There may be a few here and there, but not the majority of people. They're not living according to the God's highest consciousness. They're living according to a lower consciousness. And when you do so, you put yourself under the law of that consciousness. It's just as if a person who gets into the occult and starts to think about the astral worlds and how they may gain powers and this kind of thing. And they put their whole attention on that. And what they don't understand is that there are karmic consequences that go on within the astral worlds. And when they put themselves into the astral world, not through God consciousness, but through individual ego, they put themselves under the law of the astral worlds. And now they can be subject to beings that reside in the astral worlds that are definitely not harmonized with God. They are harmonized with what we might call evil. And so people oftentimes, and many have been, when you put yourself on the path to God, you are affected by those things. You are affected by these negative spirits. And one of the reasons is because you have some unresolved karma from that time. Now, this is nothing to be afraid of. What Mother is talking about here, this fear of insanity, this fear of losing her mind, this fear of losing consciousness, what more gripping fear would there be for most people? This would be a terrible thing. We could lose a lot of things, but our sanity, our consciousness, losing that, that's really quite a thing. And yet, as you go through these experiences, you have to surrender even that. Now, you fight for God consciousness. But God may put you through certain experiences where it proves to you that you are more than the mind. Because your mind is literally taken away from you. My life is a daily example of this. What God gives to me in the mind is strictly at His convenience. And sometimes He gives me great acuity for different, being able to do different things. And other times He withdraws it and He takes it away completely. And I have no control over it, nor do I wish to have any control over it. Because what He does through me, He does through His grace, and it is for the highest good of everybody concerned. And there are many days where He will completely take away my life energy from the body. Now, I have tremendous life energy. Carla will tell you, oftentimes it's difficult for her to be even in the same room with me because of what God is pouring through this form. And yet I don't have hardly an ounce for this body. There's enough to keep the heart beating and maybe to do some minimal basic functions. Now, it's a very not ordinary life, you might say. And then other days, all the life energy comes back and I have complete faculties over everything. And so it makes for a very interesting life. And a life of complete and total surrender. I have no choice, really, nor would I want to do anything differently. But you can see, and perhaps you can notice within yourself, well, what if that were to happen to me? Who would take care of me? How would I handle that? How would I get along in this world? What would other people think about me? And these are all very normal human reactions to have to that. And that ultimately, that whatever God puts you through, you surrender. You let it go, whatever your human reactions. You will still have your human reactions as long as there's still life in the old ego. But once that ego is crucified, that's what it means, so you let go of it. Now, with the ego dead, you manifest the purity, the wholeness, the light, the love of God. You see now that everything that God put you through was absolutely and totally necessary in order for there to be a complete scrubbing out of the inside of the cup, so that when He poured that new wine inside of you, in fact, it's a destruction of the old cup and the formation of a new one. Even as Jesus gave with the wineskin, the analogy of the wineskin. You don't put new wine into an old wineskin. The old wineskin will burst. You cannot put cosmic consciousness into the ego consciousness. And that is why ego consciousness must go. But what you manifest then is the wonder and the beauty and the bliss and the light of God consciousness. And that is all that you know. That is all that you know. Now the world may judge you as it wishes to. Each person will judge you according to their own point of view. But you know the truth within you. You know what work God has wrought. And your boss, your only boss in this world is God. And so we strive to have balance in this world. We strive to be able to serve in this world. We strive to be loving in this world to all those that are in our life. But ultimately, we give it all. We surrender it all to God. And we let Him use us and manifest Himself in us as and when He wants. But just think of the little human ego. I remember there was a time when God many times would put me through a strange experience where He would take over. It felt like a magnetic force. And He would make me walk in different directions. And sometimes I was in the public. I'd be in a store and suddenly He'd make me walk this direction and then turn around and go back that direction. Turn around several times. And in my mind, I was thinking, well, if I were watching this from the outside, this would look rather unusual. I'd wonder about the person's sanity. But I had to go according to that, and it would fulfill a purpose. Sometimes it was clear to me what the purpose was, and some, to this day, I don't know exactly why He did what He did with me. But I do know that in the process, if for no other reason, it taught me complete surrender, even in public situations. Now, what does the world think of you? Jesus said you cannot serve both God and mammon. You cannot serve both God and world opinion. You cannot. And those that love mother, father, son, daughter more than me do not deserve me, said the Christ. So you have to be able to willing to set aside. This is for many of us the most difficult test we have. What others will think. And yet, this is the part of the crucifixion. So the world will end for you. It most certainly will. Now, the world ends for everybody who has a body, because eventually everybody leaves. There's no great virtue in dying. Doesn't everybody do that? In a physical sense. But the real death, the honorable death, you might say, is the death of the human ego. And it can feel like in that time that the whole world will crumble around you and be destroyed. But know that God is in charge. And that when you surrender yourself to Him, you give Him everything, everything. And what you receive in return is everything. But you cannot have that reception until you have given. You give first. Then you are able to receive. So let us make this our vow and our absolute dedication in our spiritual life. That of complete and total surrender to the infinite divine within each and every one of us. And let God bring about a work so great that the world will look upon it and will give gratitude not to you, but to God for what has been brought about. Please pray with me. O Heavenly Father. Divine Mother. I feel the wonder and the beauty of Thy glorious presence in every part of my being. My heart is bursting with my love for Thee. I kneel in adoration at Thy feet. And surrender myself to Thee. I feel the power of Thy perfection. Surging in every cell of my being. My mind and my intelligence. Are radiant with Thy healing light. My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss. Of my communion with Thee. I and my Father are one.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am He. Peace. Bless. Amen.